The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. Got a natural way, her hips sway furiously. Yeah, the luxurious thing. Carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you've seen this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we loving on and what we hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, why the fox failed to protect the hen house. We cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time, a changing time. It's a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
You smell great.
You smell great. What is that?
Burberry, what you got on?
I forgot.
Smells expensive.
It's just deodorant.
Okay, yeah. Good.
We're smelling good. We're smelling good brothers out here.
You are awesome, man, and I appreciate you.
Help you find yourself,
Yeah, too. We should go out. Get drinks.
Our guest this week is a musician, a poet, a filmmaker, an activist, and an Oakland hero. You know his voice from The Coup and Street Sweeper Social Club. He's the writer and director of the critically acclaimed film Sorry to Bother You. He is one of the reasons Oakland is the center of the known universe. Please welcome Boots Riley. Boots, what's up?
What's happening? Thank you.
It's so good to be here with you. Yeah. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah, good to, after many years, I don't think we've ever done any kind of public talk or anything after all this time.
This is what I'm saying, but you know what? It's better to start this way because we got all the things to talk about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So before we jump in, Boots, I got to ask you, what has your quarantine life been like? I mean, I know contrary to popular opinion, we are still in a pandemic, otherwise known as a panty, a panini, or all the things, but we're still in a pandemic. And I got to know how folks are holding up during the quarantine. So what has your quarantine life been like, and have you developed any new habits, live and direct, for Miss Rona?
Well, I mean, I'm always putting too much on my plate, so I've been basically just gotten a lot of work done and gotten into a better mode of productivity while at the same time having more time for family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wake up at 5:45 in the morning. And I write for 4 hours before we have our Zoom writer's room at 10.
Nice.
And then after that, I'm handling different kinds of business, but I'm eating every meal with my family, and which has not been my life for many decades. So,
yeah. I love that. What's it like to not be on a plane all the time, or on a train, or in a bus, or in a car? Like, are you getting used to being in one place, but still kind of being projected everywhere digitally? How's that going?
Yeah, definitely. As you alluded to, I've spent a large percentage of my time out of town, and whether it's touring or doing other events or things like that. And I've gotten used to this in a good way. And interestingly, doing film allows for a little bit more stability in terms of geographically where you are. For me, at least the way I'm doing it, because we're going to do this TV show and we're going to film it all in Oakland.
Yes.
And where to promote my wares with music, I got to just constantly be going. And also maybe because it was paying a lot less for me, I couldn't say no to things.
Yeah.
You know,
makes sense.
I mean, totally. I could say no to things if I didn't agree with them, but if it was a show and I only had a weekend off, I needed to bring in those pennies, you know?
Oh, yeah. So. For sure. The life of a creator. Are you learning any new skills during the pandemic? Because I got to know, if the apocalypse comes to fruition, which it feels like we're closer to than ever, I got to know what you bring into the table.
Yeah, I don't think I've learned anything new, except just more of the same thing. I've gotten a lot of the same kinds of things done that I was always trying to do. But, you know, I know my projected goals. So I never was one of the people that were like, I'm going to start, you know, making nut pies, you know, or whatever. Totally. So,
well, I like that. Slow and steady wins the race, my friend. You're speaking to my heart. First and foremost, before we jump into the convo today, I just got to shout out your pops, Mr. Walter Riley, who literally has kept me and the homies out of jail a couple times. And in so many ways is such an incredible freedom fighter. It's an honor to be on the pod with you today because you are and have been for a long time creating your own path and fighting for freedom in your own way. So I got to just ask you, because I know my listeners want to know, Boots is not your born name. So tell us, where does the name Boots come from?
Wearing boots at the wrong time in the wrong place.
Yeah. Tell me more. I have to hear this story.
So I don't know if they still have it, but when I was in high school, I went to Oakland High, and all the schools in the Bay Area had this thing called Senior Fling. And it was a trip to Southern California that everybody saved up to, you know, since you entered high school, you could pay $50 every quarter or something to go there. And the trip was, you're going for 5 days to Southern California. One day is going to be Magic Mountain. One day is going to be Disneyland. One day is going to be Knott's Berry Farm. I think a day was at Catalina Island and then Huntington Beach or something like that. And the whole thing is, you know, you're going to be unchaperoned no matter what they say.
Totally.
And so you got all kinds of partying, imagining, sex, everything is going on in everybody's heads. But the one thing that I didn't think about was that you had to, Disneyland, they were like, well, we don't want the kids to be rowdy, so we're going to have them have a dress code. It's going to be midnight to 8. We're going to call our thing grad night. And you go midnight to 8 and you have to wear a suit or a formal attire.
Oh.
And I didn't at the time, I didn't wear suits or anything like that. And I bought myself a suit, but I didn't think about the dress shoes. And before I was going to get on the bus, I was like, oh, I forgot my dress shoes. And I asked my father to go get me some dress shoes that I could wear with the suit. And he was into a certain kind of footwear that maybe I hadn't matured enough to be into at the time, which were the floor shine boots with the zipper up the side.
Yes. The thigs is gangster.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I definitely have a couple pairs of those right now. But in high school, it's all about doing whatever everybody else is doing to some extent. You know, it could be a gift that you have, or, you know, but if it's different than what everybody else is doing, that's going to get used against you. So I got on the bus with these boots on, you know, going from the hotel to Disneyland, got on the bus with these boots on, which you couldn't tell were boots when you're standing up. But when I sat down, my boy Langston Hughes was in the back of the bus. And at the time, my birth name is Raymond Riley. And at the time, people didn't call me Raymond. They didn't call me Ray. They called me Ray Riley. They thought that was my name, not Ray or Riley. Ray Riley. People would be like, Ray Riley, what's your last name? You know? So people call me Ray Riley. And Langston Hughes from the back of the bus was like, Ray Riley's wearing boots. Ray Riley's wearing boots. And so then this just, the bus ran up. Because here's the underlying thing is everybody planned all this debauchery. And it was way more boring than any of that. At least for many of it. I don't know. So anything people could latch on to, they were ready.
Yeah.
And that happened. Then when we go to Catalina Island, there's a talent show. At the time, I was a dancer. Mind you, every single high school from Vallejo down to San Jose was there at this time. That everybody's going in caravans of buses, right?
Yes.
And so Catalina Island is where all the high schools met up and had a talent show, like all these school districts. And so I entered the talent show. I was not wearing boots, but a few people remembered it from the other day, the day before. And so I'm dancing and somebody just starts chanting, boots, boots,
yes,
boots, boots. And then that becomes the chant. And I guess like maybe when people were asking what's going on, I'm imagining when people were asking what's going on, they were saying that. So, and then when we got back to school, now somebody had taken some, because you had to share hotel rooms. So somebody had gone into my room and taken Mickey Mouse and put him in the boots and took a picture.
Yeah.
And then at Oakland High, they had the Commons, and which is like an all-purpose room or whatever where we eat. Somebody had blown it up. I suspect it was probably Langston. Somebody had blown up the picture to poster size. And at the time, the song that everybody was listening to, one of the big songs that everybody loved was by Biz Markie, mm-hmm, called Nobody Beats the Biz.
Mm-hmm.
And the album cover of that single or album, I don't know what it was, is the old English letters, were yep, these old English letters that said, Nobody Beats the Biz, and it had like a tint to it. Well, they did that to this, and it said, Nobody Beats the Boots, and they blew it up to poster size. So this was like a thing, and so everybody was calling me Boots, and I would not respond. Like they were like, Boots, Boots, and I would act like I don't hear them until they said my name. And then because, like I said, it was way more boring than people thought it would be, there were people from other schools who I did not know, and I'd be going down the street, and they'd be like, Boots, you know? Because they needed something to latch on to about that trip. And so that was a story. So it became something. And then so then when I went to San Francisco State, you know, I tried to wipe all that away. And, you know, I'd be like, yeah, Raymond Riley or whatever. And then if somebody was at State and they met somebody else from Oakland High, they'd be like, oh, you know, Raymond Riley. They'd be like, you mean Boots? Call him Boots when you see him. Call him Boots. So
that is amazing.
So when I was making demos and going to put out a tape, I was like, damn, I need something so that, you know, I want people to know that it's me, you know, who it is. So I was like,
that's
okay,
right.
I'm going to just call myself Boots. And
I
then
love this.
People will know it's me.
I love this. First of all, my cheeks hurt from like smiling so big. This is an excellent story. You were way ahead of your time, my friend. And also, you know, everybody loves Ray, but we love Boots even more. So that's what's up. On until I get a sense of what kind of dance you were doing. I didn't miss that. What kind of dancing were you doing at this talent show?
I was dancing on a couple videos. Any videos by Mario Bobino? Actually, there's a very big piece of connective tissue right there. There's a dude in Oakland who was making movies in the 80s, and he happened to be a graduate of Oakland High, and he was coming back and he was just doing it. He just had like a VH, I don't know what it was. And he was making all sorts of movies. Every couple of weeks, he'd be making a movie. And a lot of people were involved with it. And he also made people's music videos.
Oh, okay.
And so my boy, his before DJ Quick came out, there was an MC Quick who changed his name. You probably know him around. He goes by the name Naru Quina. And he had a video. I'm dancing in that video. And yeah, that was back in the days where you just look in the mirror with your friend and you start coming up with routines.
Like, I love this.
All that stuff. And so, yeah.
This
and
is
at the
amazing.
Time, I worked at the Instep, which was the Adidas store. And this was like at the time when Adidas was the shit. And it was like right out. I worked at the Adidas store when Run DMC had my Adidas.
Okay,
and,
here we go.
And so a lot of people at Oakland High were hooked up with all sorts of Adidas outfits. All sorts of deals being made through the back door.
Yep.
And that was at MB Mall, which is now where Kaiser is. And so I had all the fits from anything I could steal from the Instep. I had all the new stuff. So dancing and looking like, and how much I hooked people up. I definitely did feel resentful at the time that after I hooked everybody up, then I still got a nickname like Boots.
You know what? I'm telling you, you were ahead of your time, homie. This is what it is. One of the things I'm really just enjoying about you is you are painting a picture for me of an Oakland that I did not live in, but I feel like it's what I appreciate about Oakland. I've been here for like 20-something years. I'm not from Oakland, but I love Oakland. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know you've been involved in social movements since you were like 14. I mean, obviously you come up in a political family, but you really make your own road. Yeah. All the while you're creating art that matters. And in your catalog, I'm noticing you've worked with a lot of artists that a lot of people probably wouldn't say put out revolutionary work, right? But they're some of my favorite artists, right? Like E-40, some of my favorite artists. I got to ask your opinion because for a lot of folks who come out of the Bay, people are talking about what they live, what they see, what they experience every day. May not be revolutionary as we might call it, right? But it's real. And at the same time, I often think that one of the reasons that people tend to shy away from doing some of the artistic work that you've done is because maybe they think there's no money in it, right? Like, can you blow up as an artist and still have a conscious or a revolutionary message? So I just got to ask your opinion on that. Is there pressure for artists to not be political or only be political in certain ways? How do artists like E-40 respond to your invitation to be more explicitly political?
Yeah. So by the time I was doing music in a serious way, it was for a particular reason, for in order to inject the radical politics from organizations that I had been a part of into a larger scale. I was tired of only a few people knowing about certain things. So I was never like, oh, let me find the kinds of artists I could work with. You know, I was like, what are people listening to? Right.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the ultimate thing. And not only that, I also like certain music because I'm listening to what everyone else is listening to.
Yep.
And so I want to put my ideas out to people that aren't coming to it to look for it. Right. And so I'm always looking to see where I intersect with folks. And I found myself doing that before that as an organizer, where I'm talking to someone about a certain campaign or a certain issue. And, you know, as opposed to just the surface thing of, you know, I'm looking to see where their goals in life intersect with my goals in life and how I think that needs to happen. And so, you know, there's a lot of songs out there, of which E-40 is part of it, that are talking about people hustling, quote unquote, hustling.
Yep.
And he has a lot of stories that are connected to selling dope or and various other folks. And mind you, it wasn't just E40. My first demo tape was with Spice One, who I used to work at UPS with. Me and Spice One used to work at UPS and be rapping in the bellies of the airplanes while we were hiding from the manager, right?
Yep.
And so our first demo tape, that was the first song that anybody ever heard the coup on was on Wax That Ass Records. And the compilation tape was called Dope Like a Pound or a Key.
Uh-huh.
But so with folks like E-40 and Spice One, I'm looking, well, what is that about when people are talking about that they want to, they're trying to stack money and they're doing this to come up and they're worried about being taken down this way, that way. And it's about a certain view of how to get power. And that's what folks are looking for, is power over their own lives, power to dictate what happens around them. And so my efforts were always to connect with that, right? To connect with them under that idea and say, you know, we're talking about some of the same things. Here are some of the bigger ideas around that. And surprisingly, it was E-40 that came to me first, because there's a lyric in our first single called Not Yet Free that says, I got a mirror in my pocket and I practice looking hard. and this was when they were first, they had a song called Tired of Being Stepped On.
That's one of my favorites. It's one of my favorite songs on the planet.
And so they're talking about some of the same stuff.
Yep.
And maybe sometimes I'll have a different analysis of why it's happening and what the way out of it is. But the thing that's making those conversations happen is the same. And so he was like, hey, I really feel what you were saying in that song. And, you know, we got to work together. And so that's when a song happened with me in the chorus that's called Practice Looking Hard on E-40's album. But, you know, after we came out, a lot of people that put into the category of gangster rap or this and that, they came up to us after our first album came out, came up to me. And I had a few different conversations that were very similar, where they were like, man, you know, we're talking about the same thing. We kicking that science. That was a way to say it back then.
Yeah.
And these were folks that would be categorized as being vulgarly about violence or gangster rap and all of this kind of stuff. But what they are and what they were right. They were talking about the struggle and the way that they see it. So if they make a song that says, here's how you turn cocaine into crack, it's because they are thinking, hey, I believe that black capitalism is a way for people to get free. And I see these as avenues that are open to folks. And I want people to have this knowledge to survive. And so I think organizers are always trying to figure out where those intersections are and how to move folks to the left. And so for me, honestly, it wasn't necessarily about getting to those artists first. It was about talking to the same people that they were talking to and putting out my idea of how it all works, because people are listening to it, wanting to connect with folks that are going through the same struggles.
You know what? You speaking my love language to me right now. You talking to me about organizing and strategy and what it means to build a base and what it means to reach people. And honestly, I could talk about this all day. I mean, one, you're bringing up all of the memories from my come up, just like growing up. And I will say, you don't have to say in the old times, homie, because, you know, it doesn't feel old to me, okay? These are some of my favorite memories of coming up as a young person in the Bay. And I feel like so many of those songs and so many of these things that you describe really describes the magic of this place that I think unless you are here and have been here, you just don't fully get, right? You might be a voyeur into it, but you just don't fully get. You were talking about like the secret sauce to what makes this place a place. You speak to my heart when you start talking about things like reaching people where they are and figuring out ways not to put people in smaller and smaller boxes, right? But to like expand our world over and over again, because really to get free, we need millions of people, right?
Exactly.
Who are looking for us, right? And we're looking for each other, really, because there's no saviors. We're looking for each other, but we don't know how to fucking find each other. And so we got to be in many different places. And I noticed in 2020 that you actually came out and endorsed Bernie Sanders for president.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to hear from your perspective as somebody who's been explicitly political for a very long time, but we also know some of the limitations of our movement in relationship to electoral organizing, electoral work. There's lots of debates still happening about whether or not that's for us. Why are we even getting engaged in that? It's all corrupt. It's not corrupt. It's all corrupt. It's not corrupt. My argument has been this is one place where millions of people engage. And yes, there are lots of problems with it, but you cannot throw out all those people for whom that is their only political act, right? Every year, their only political work is to vote for somebody. Let's try to do what we can to get folks in the mix. I would like to hear from your own perspective. There was a lot written about this about you, but I'd like to hear from your own words. What made you step out and endorse a candidate for a major political party in the middle of what has arguably been one of the most bizarre presidential contests in my lifetime? Just curious to hear your perspective on that.
Okay. So yeah, the reason that I endorsed Bernie Sanders was because in talking to his campaign and in the things that they were wanting to put through, such as Medicare for All, it was clear to them that the only way to get it, even if Bernie Sanders was elected, would be to call for and help organize general strikes, right? That's what was talked about when they talked about West Virginia, who had had the teacher strike and how they were going to move these supposedly center Democrats to do these things. It was going to be through shutting things down, through shutting down the economy. And to me, that aspect of it is what we need to radicalize those folks that we're not getting to. One reason we're not getting to all the folks that we're not getting to is because of the kinds of work the left has been involved with for the last 60 years. The left has left behind class struggle since for the last 60 years. And not, I don't mean that there hasn't been analysis of like, oh, this is, there's a problem with capitalism, but the actual class struggle in which we organize on the job to have a movement that shuts down places at the point of production, which is the fulcrum point of capitalism, that is class struggle. And since the beginning of the new left, and this is not just progressives, not just liberals, but radicals as well, have left behind those strategies. And so my reasoning for endorsing Bernie was because it was part of what I believe is a larger movement to get people more involved in radical politics. And, you know, I am not a person that thinks I agree with you. There's a lot of people. I mean, this year was the biggest amount, right? 150 million people voting, right? Mm-hmm. But even that's still leaving out a large section of folks that were just like, you know, seen it before. I'm not going for it. So, but the way to get to all of those folks is through organizing in ways that they think can work, that they believe handles the crux of power. When we had Occupy Oakland, this was after I'd been involved for 20-something years in organizing in Oakland. And I've been involved in all sorts of things, from communist revolutionary organizations to broader anti-racist, quote-unquote, organizations to all Black radical organizations. That was the most average, everyday Black folks from Oakland that ever got involved in any of that stuff, right? Yep. And the reason why is because it had called for a general strike. It wasn't technically a real general strike, even though there was 50,000 people that showed up and we shut down the ports and all that kind of stuff. But the call for it was something where people were like, that could work. Mm. Because out of many years of trying to get people to come to demonstrations and we're going to protest at the police department, the main thing is people being like, man, well, then what? What's going to happen? You know? And I've been there with tens of thousands of people that come out and they're like, okay, now what? And you're like, I don't know. We're going to lift our voices, you know,
yeah.
Because...
Not lift our voices. Come on, know? Man.
I mean, because that's basically what we're saying. We're saying, like, if we show that we're fed up with it, then power will concede. And we're selling the wrong analysis of how power works under capitalism when we do that. And people read it, they feel it, they understand it at various levels, and many times won't come out because they don't think it will do anything. And many times they're right, you know? And I think when Occupy Oakland called for a general strike, 50,000 people came out, you know, and throughout, before and after that, many of them, average everyday Black folks and other folks of color that had never come out before, because they saw it speaking to the truth of capitalism and how power works. And if we can organize a movement that is radical but organizes at the workplace, people will get more involved because they see it as able to work.
You know what? I know people nicknamed you Boots back in the day, but I would like to propose Radical Ray, because I'm feeling what you're talking about and you are speaking my love language. And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Let's start off with leaving town as a senator when your state is underwater. Now, Cha, we've had enough of Ted Cruz. From his unabashed defense of a complete idiot in the form of Donald Trump, to his ridiculous decision to hop on a plane to Cancun in the midst of a massive crisis, partly brought on by climate change, but also the refusal of many of the state's politicians, including Ted Cruz, to do their fucking job. These people, okay? Honestly, for the entire life of me, I cannot understand how these people still have a job. But Texans, that's really up to y'all. Ted Cruz should not get another night of peaceful sleep for the rest of his term. And frankly, I think he should be removed from his seat. He literally left y'all out there to die. I don't know, y'all. The Republican Party could literally rename itself the Marie Antoinettes, and their motto, let them all eat cake. Fuck these people. Also, on this week's list of things Lady just ain't gonna do this week, town halls with broken promises. Now, y'all know Lady has been very generous with the Biden-Harris administration, recognizing, of course, the massive tasks ahead of them and feeling cautiously hopeful about the initial actions that they've taken. But truth be told, the administration suffered a big blow this week when President Biden did a town hall midweek where he was, well, going back on what he said he was going to do. Now, truth be told, and no shade at all to the president, but I don't think these forums are his best contribution. I'm going to say it. Do I think he's sincere? Yes, totally. Do I think his vision is stuck in 1990? Yes, yes, I do. So, of course, you can imagine why the shit hit the fan when Biden said no to canceling $50,000 worth of student loan debt per borrower and said yes to more money for policing. So, look, you know what I'm going to say here. Let's get to work. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. Now, here's what we want more of this week, though. Number one, white on white crime. Now look, I tell you, 2021 has been the year of white people throwing each other under the bus. Okay. In this week's latest episode of It Be Your Own People, you know who blew right through Ted Cruz's flimsy ass excuses as to why he and his family were headed to the Ritz-Carlton Cancun as opposed to making sure his constituents were okay? Okay, it was his own people. I mean, the way these ladies in the group chat left Karen Cruz in the cold, I can't help but cackle, because you know them ladies was out there like, how is this hoe finna go to Cancun while I'm freezing? Hold up, hold my beer. The best part of the whole thing is that while black people in America understand that these hoes ain't loyal, you know who always seems to be surprised by the shit? White people. Other things Lady loves this week, I'll tell you, Black Futures Month is showing all the way out with the announcement that this week, hateful ass Rush Limbaugh died at the age of 70. He spent the majority of his life spewing hateful bullshit about almost everyone you can think of, penalizing and criticizing others for shit he suffered from himself. Now, I don't wish death on anybody, but I also am not mourning the death of this man who offered basically nothing to push humanity forward and help change the Republican Party from a coherent ideology that I deeply, deeply disagreed with to a swamp of conspiracy theories, racist rhetoric, and irresolvable contradictions. What a legacy. On another note, Lady believes she told y'all how she's dry this February. Okay, look, Lady loves the fact that we have a little over a week until tequila can come back into my life. And with the state of politics today, I'm gonna need it. It's been really good being sober this month. And I can't say that I'm not looking forward to a cocktail after a long day. And these days, every day feels like a long day, okay? So if you're catching this roundup on Friday, February 19th, speaking of long days, do not forget to tune in to the Black to the Future Action Fund's release of Our Black Mandate for the Biden-Harris Administration. Build Back Bolder. You can follow the conversation on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific time as Jemele Hill hosts, and we are joined by powerhouses like Nse Ufot from New Georgia Project, Latasha Brown from Black Voters Matter, Bishop William Barber from the Poor People's Campaign, Reverend Al Sharpton from the National Action Network, Aria Saeed from the Compton's Transgender Cultural District, and Deborah Scott from Georgia Stand Up. Even Lady will make a special appearance. Join us as we talk about the mandate to build back Boulder and the opportunities that await us when we do. If you want to check out our mandate, you can visit Black to the Future Action Fund on all the socials or go to www.black2thefuture.org. I don't want to let you go without talking about what projects you have on deck, because I want everybody listening to come out and support the work that you're doing. So let us know what you're working on and how can we get involved.
Let's see. I have a TV show that I'm working on right now that is about a 13-foot tall black man who lives in Oakland.
Yes.
It's called I'm a Virgo.
Yes.
And Jarrell Jerome is playing the lead.
I love him.
Yeah. So many people loved him from When They See Us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're in the writer's room now. But we're going to production on that in August. It'll be right here in the Bay Area. And
yes.
I have two other feature films that, you know, I don't know when we'll announce what those are. But they're all crazy, but they're all talking about the same thing.
Okay. You know. Promise us when you're ready to release, you'll come back on the show and talk to us all about
it. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
We appreciate you so much, Boots. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Blessings to you.
Peace.
And that's it for Lady Don't Take No. But I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where you used to have a commute. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what you like, tell us what's on your mind, and tell us what you ain't gonna take no more of. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things you hear about on this show all over our social media. So, if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. And don't forget to give a special shout out to Jahari Farrar for making sure that our socials have all the things you need. We appreciate you, Jahari. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer, he's incredible, and his name is Phil Circus. Our fabulous theme is by Latyrix, and this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, fuck Ted Cruz. Protect your neck, because white-on-white crime is at an all-time high, and Rush Limbaugh is dead, but unfortunately his hate lives on. That's right, I said it. Because lady don't take no.
Lady don't take no shit. Insist on respect the sister. Walk around like a womanish. She won't speak less of something worse saying. Don't play. The girl take herself so seriously. People stare curiously. She got a natural way. Her hips sway furiously. Yeah, the luxury.
Love y'all. There is a self like the